Back on In Focus, News Radio KMAN, here coming up on 924. We're talking with Dr. Chad Austin, Biorisk Management Training Program Coordinator at NBAF. And I might just ask you, what are you doing now here to prepare NBAF's training program, Chad?
You know, that's a great question, Brandon. You might think, well, you know, the facility's not done. What could you do that you could that would prepare you for a training program, or that would prepare folks to work in there? And you might think, well, there's not much. And that's actually not true. There are a number of different things that we can do right now before the building's done and before we take occupation in it. And they're going to be absolutely critical to our success. So, I mean, if you think about where you work, what are the things that that provide you success where you work? It's probably going to be the relationships that you have with your coworkers and the communication that you have with them, being able to have a conversation, be on the same page. Those are fundamental activities, and those are things that we're doing now. And those relationships are relationships that we're building now, and they're going to stand us in good stead when we get into the facility. And, you know, there's other things too that we can talk about, some of the more abstract concepts and ideas as well. It's the activity that I think is really super important, and truly the communication is it's a supporting activity for an initiative that I'm really, really excited about, that we have called the High Reliability Organization Initiative, or HRO Initiative. NBAF wants to become a high reliability organization. That might sound kind of not very clear. People might not know what that is. Some examples of HROs are aviation organizations, folks who run and operate nuclear submarines. HROs can be found in firefighting and healthcare industries, especially in the critical care settings, where in all these types of jobs and types of work environments are places where, you know, you could have something go very, very wrong and cause some damage, but they don't. They operate successfully in that relatively high risk environment or high risk potential environment. But because they have this HRO approach, which is another way of saying a strong culture of safety, an extensive planning and extensive preparation, they don't suffer a major system failure. They actually take those little things that happen that you make, oh, that's not supposed to happen, or that wasn't what we had planned for, and they look at that and they investigate it. They actually turn the unexpected little things into opportunities to learn so that they can prevent the big things from going wrong. And we're still kind of developing exactly how we want to go about this. We're currently in kind of a learning and planning phase for becoming an HRO, but I'm very, very excited about it. I think it's going to be a fantastic effort. when we get our planning sorted out, we'll be definitely sure to share it and make sure that folks are in the loop on it.
Very good. As far as training employees right now, when you're trying to work in a high maximum containment laboratory, is that hard, especially with COVID restrictions right now?
Yeah. So I wouldn't want to sign off on anyone to go into a lab without having some hands-on, you know, training experience with them. The training we're able to do right now, like you pointed out, due to COVID, is by remote learning, webinars, and things like that. And so we can cover some of those topics and those opportunities to learn, like I mentioned a little bit ago. But we couldn't really get to the hands-on skill sets that people would need. And so when we do have the facility open and we are able to work in the same physical space as each other, then we'll be able to get those elements in place. And NBAF is absolutely committed to safety. We're not going to be putting anybody inexperienced or unready in a high-risk work environment. What I'm hoping to do is have a kind of a progressive training program for onboarding and for bringing in new employees and bringing even folks from other high containment sites. Because you know that we advertise nationwide for when we have a job opening. It's, like I said, going to be a progressive system, starting off with concepts, a lot of classroom time, a lot of self-directed learning time, and then an opportunity to have Q&A with someone who knows the topics, potentially myself or someone else from the facility who's knowledgeable on the topics, and then move into more of a hands-on type scenario where folks can see visual demonstrations of things, where they can practice some of the critical skills they'll need to have in a low-risk or a no-risk environment, and then move into a mentorship style relationship with somebody who is more experienced, and they'll be able to have conversation with that person about why is this procedure in place? You know, what does this protect further downstream? How does this support the mission? And they'll be able to understand those downstream impacts of why things are done the way they're done and what could potentially happen if they're not done the right way. So I really want to be able to let folks focus on that, learn about that downstream impact. It's something that we call sensitivity to operations. And then when they've completed their mentorship program, then they can demonstrate their skills to maybe myself or maybe their supervisor or maybe another laboratory leader, somebody who's knowledgeable about the type of work that they're going to be doing, make sure that they've got all the skills they need, and we know that they've got all the knowledge that they need, and then they would be approved to work without their mentor. And that's kind of the progressive, and when I say progressive, I mean like progressively immersive, progressively challenging, progressively skill building type of training program that I want to put together. It's still in development, so it's not established yet. But that is the approach we want to take. And you know, like we also want to make sure to recognize that training is never really, really, truly over. We all, you know, want to make sure that like, if a procedure changes, that everybody's trained up on the change in procedure, or if there's new information that comes out about something that might impact the way we do things, that that information gets disseminated, or if there's a new skill that somebody needs to have, like let's say for a new type of research experiment, that they would make sure that they have that, and that way, you know, people can stay on track. We can avoid people becoming complacent. We can avoid people potentially moving away from the procedure as it's supposed to be, and we can have a smoothly functioning program.
All right. Well, we've covered a lot of ground here and a lot of good information. Want to give an opportunity here to Dr. Burton to answer a question here real quick. We're nearing a year of the pandemic's effects in Kansas. What has USDA been doing here lately in response to COVID?
Thanks, Brandon. A lot of activity. I'll just mention a couple of things that are pertinent. USDA MBAS has been closely following the guidelines from the pandemic reopening playbook that USDA provides us. We've been following that since beginning maximum telework back in March of 2020, so just almost a year ago. We've been through that. We've been preparing our temporary office space with separation barriers, signage, cleaning and disinfection plans. But then coming up here very soon, next month, we're in the process of preparing for MBAS soft opening next month. And this is when USDA will assume responsibility for full operations of the central utility plant, the wastewater pretreatment plant, IT support, and the security contract for MBAS. So over the next several months, we're going to be following a newly released USDA workplace safety plan. And this is an updated reopening plan to get ready for moving our personnel into the MBAS site at substantial completion, but then also to prepare for that soft opening. So Katie's team's done a couple of walkthroughs through the in-bath space to identify signage that's going to be needed, gathering areas that need to be restricted for the COVID safety protocols, and being sure that we spread out our workforce within the office area. Then another thing I might quickly mention is part of the role for USDA, particularly veterinary services, of which the APHIS in-bath team is a part of, is emergency response. And so several weeks ago, veterinary services received a request from FEMA to help support the vaccination efforts across the nation. So currently we have 114 veterinary service veterinarians, veterinary technicians, and other subject matter experts that have been deployed on 30-day rotations to about 8 or 9 different states across the nation to help support the vaccination efforts to get those rolled out to the American people. So even though we're an animal-focused organization within USDA, we still have the opportunity to step up and help out on the human side every once in a while when asked. So.
All right. Well, that's good information there, Katie. You know, we've seen COVID cases going down. Is teleworking still continuing out at InBev?
Yes, Brandon. Most of our USDA InBev team is still teleworking. I am pleased to say, though, and we just pulled these numbers together, I think it's pretty impressive, that we've now successfully onboarded 117 team members during this period of telework, which began in mid-March of last year. So that's a lot of people. And that actually means that more than half of our current team has onboarded virtually. And many of those folks even interviewed virtually, including half of my team. So I feel like we've done a really great job as a team coming together and figuring out how to keep getting the job done, even when we can't be together. But we're certainly all looking forward to that time when we can. And as Dr. Burton said, we're preparing to be able to get back into our office space and then also to start phasing into the facility. I feel like we've done a pretty good job.
Very good. Well, lastly here, before we go, any more key hires at NBAF recently, and where can people find positions that are posted now?
I'll take the quick part and then let Katie wrap this up, Brandon. But yeah, we've had some pretty key hires here recently. We have our APHIS operations director, Mr. Patrick Moylan, who's starting mid-March. He's currently been the operations director at Plum Island Animal Disease Center, so he brings a lot of expertise with him. We're interviewing for our biologics development module director. Just closed the announcement for the zoonotic and emergent disease research unit research leader, and have recently posted positions for an associate foreign animal disease diagnostic laboratory director and our safety, health, environmental management director. So a lot of key positions that we'll be filling here in the very near future.
Thanks, Dr. Burton. I'll just throw in, Brandon, we also have an announcement posted right now for a lab supervisor, and recently closed several announcements for a security supervisor, electronics technician, financial and budget technician. So really, again, we kind of cover a very wide spectrum of available job opportunities. I'll just kind of report between operational hiring and commitments that we're aware of for our science programs. We are about two-thirds of the way to the 400 we expect to have on board by the end of 2023. But we still have just under 50 positions to fill just on the operations side. So certainly want to encourage anyone interested in coming to work with us to be on the lookout for job announcements on usajobs.gov. And we continue to post information about job opportunities on our Twitter and LinkedIn accounts as well.
Very good. Well, we covered a lot of ground here this morning, and we always appreciate getting an update here from NBAF officials. And Dr. Burton, Katie Pulaski, and Dr. Chad Austin, thank you all for joining us here this morning.
Thanks, as always, Brandon.
Yeah.
Thank you
very much.
Yeah. You bet.
Sorry, Katie.
Stay tuned. We'll have more in focus continuing after this on News Radio KMAN.